Before we begin, a quick preamble. During the course of this podcast, we both mention Sony's acquisitions and also talk about Sony's apparent reluctance to produce new IP. And things have happened this week which really, really affect those two subjects. The most important being that actually Sony did buy Bluepoint, something we talked about being a really obvious thing to do during the course of recording this episode. So if you want to hear us predict things before they happen, but listen to them after they happen, then no, please do subscribe to Cloud of War. We would be flipping Nostradamus if I wasn't so lazy. Hello and welcome to the Cloud of War podcast. This is season 3, episode 5. It is the 27th of September. It has been quite some time since our last confession. I'm Christy.
And I'm Dan.
And other than us being completely incompetent, I can't really think of an excuse for why we've missed, what, 2 months?
2 months. I was ill for a bit. That came. Yeah. So the meat of what we're talking about today is a bit of a report card on Sony, the PS5, and where they are now. But before we go on to that, what have we been playing? Let's kick off with Tribes of Midgard, because that's one we've both been playing.
Yeah, we got a reasonable for particularly ADHD gamers, we got a fair amount of play out of that one, I thought.
Yeah, and a decent number of people playing at the same time as well. We must have had 5 at one time.
Yeah.
Early days, yeah. And at least 4. And it's kind of a take on the craft and survive type thing, but with a pre-built village, people you can level up, and big ass monsters coming after you every couple of days ish. Yeah. Never quite worked out how long it took them. And it works really well as a co-op game with up to 10 people. And it's just, it plays very nicely. It borrows some ideas, but it's got some good ideas of its own. It's kind of got a nice sort of season pass and unlockables and gives stuff to you, new stuff, at a reasonable canter. Shall we say, where other games can seem to be quite stingy. I thought it was pretty well measured on Tribes of Midgard.
Yeah, I thought so too. Although I did feel constantly under pressure to upgrade. It was like, oh my God, we've got to, right now we're not quite powerful enough for the next thing, so we need to get like our next upgrades and come on, chivvying everyone up to try and get something done. It was quite fun.
It's quite impressive. We didn't have any major falling outs with who's nicked all the X. I can't get my new shiny new shield anymore. Somebody's bought it, so used it all. Because you have like a big shared pot that we tended to put everything in.
I did have some questions sometimes. You know, I kept them to myself.
It's probably best. But yeah, it's a nice little game. And very well priced as well.
Yeah, it was. I suspect that probably in a month we'll see another season, and that season will probably cost, I don't know, a 10 or 15 quid or something like that. But I thought we got our money's worth.
Yeah,
out of the amount of fun we had. There is a sort of season pass system in there and monetization as well, but it all seemed fair, especially given the asking price. I didn't really feel like I was being robbed or actually feel the need to spend any extra money. So. No. Yeah, no, I really enjoyed that. It was fun while it lasted.
Okay, Hades next, because I know you've played it a lot before and possibly mentioned it on a previous podcast. But it's my first time playing through, and it came on Game Pass recently, which was nice. And yeah, it's had all the plaudits before, and you can see why. It's
I bought it twice.
It's another one of those titles that's really well judged. In terms of how much you get out of a run, it's a roguelike where you die and you go back and you try again. But
yeah, I think for a lot of people, roguelike, you mentioned the word roguelike and that's, you know, they'll just turn around and walk away straight off. But I think a lot of people who don't generally gel with roguelikes get on with Hades because there's so much else to progress. Even if you die, the story carries on. And it's the absolute pinnacle of telling a story within the framework of a roguelike.
Yeah, It's really, really well done, the story and the beats, and it just sort of, it never feels like it's getting in the way of the game, and it always feels like it's interesting to listen to the characters and hear about the side bits.
Absolutely. And, you know, I've mentioned this at least two or three times before, but the guy who does the music and is the voice of Zagreus, just outrageously talented. I love all of the music in the game. I love his acting. I mean, if you hear him talk, because there's a great noclip series of documentaries on the making of Hades, you hear him talk, he sounds nothing at all like Zagreus. Like, it's just the opposite. It's just very good.
I thought he sounded very familiar, the way he speaks. And as you said, he doesn't sound like that normally, but it was bothering me for ages. And then I realized he sounds like the guy who does zero punctuation reviews.
Yeah.
He's kind of got that edge to the voice.
The kind of laconic vibe.
Yeah. It took me quite a while to work that out. Hades is good. Play it. I will say Ghost of Tsushima again, because the director's cut has come out recently. So it's the proper PS5 version. And so I got the add-on bit, and I have today just finished Act 1. Get in.
Yeah.
It's only taken me 35 hours. And now I've finished Act 1, I am now piling back into the initial areas to just clear up all those bits that have popped up on the map.
Yeah, that's not going to be good for you.
But yeah, I may take a break at this point, or push on and just push through the story after going back
a bit,
just because I want to get on to Death Stranding Director's Cut.
Which is just lovely. I've been absolutely hooked on it since it launched on Friday. I'm already a working week in terms of hours.
Nice.
I watched it was like a fun video by PlayStation Access from years ago, just earlier on today, and it was like, which open world would you most like to live in for real? And without a doubt, it's Death Stranding, mostly because it's Iceland, secondly because there's bugger all people around. But there's just something about that. I think I said it on the forum. He manages in a setting which is absolutely the opposite of joy and hope. He manages to make you feel hopeful and make you feel joyful about the things you're doing. And it's just fun. And a lot of it just makes you smile. And he has somehow managed to make walking a game. And like an engrossing one. Rachel, my wife, and I, we always talk about it in kind of old school open world games. You know that bit where you try to get up the side of a mountain that you shouldn't really be able to get up?
Yeah.
And you kind of hop and slide and hop and slide. We call that scrimming, as in it's a shorthand for Skyrimming up the side of a hill. Because that's what we did, you know, you Skyrim it up. And he has taken that and turned it into something that's just utterly engrossing, and I'm making it sound like that's the whole game, but that's the boring bit between the exciting stuff, and he's made that interesting. And it's just everything that he's done is like a high level chef elevating simple elements and turning them into something else. And I know I sound really wanky talking about it, but he's worked wonders with just every single potentially boring part of the gameplay. I've said it before, I've got a love-hate relationship with Hideo Kojima. I think that he likened himself to Miyazaki. And as a Ghibli fan, I just thought, no, that's you've taken your arrogance too far. But this is one of those games that he's made that are in the subset of games that justifies arrogance. It's just wonderful wandering around there again. It's a bit like the Demon Souls remake as well, where I felt like I was playing it for the first time, even though I knew everything inside out. It's incredibly pretty. It was pretty before, but it's much prettier now. Yeah, it's just a must experience, in my opinion.
I'm tempted to just park Ghosts as I finish Act 1 and go in for Death Stranding, just because of the other people playing it at the same time element as well.
Yeah, I think, I mean, I've always argued that certain games have a currency.
Yeah.
And Death Stranding right now has that currency. Everyone is playing right now. And a lot of the systems require all those people to be playing at the same time. Because for anyone who doesn't know, one of the real masterstrokes is that, let's say you're walking around the landscape, you will start to wear down the grass as you walk around and you'll create a path. But the magical thing about it is that path will appear in some other players' games and they will use it because it's easier going. And so they turn it into a wider path. And then he layers on top of that with the ability to build bridges across river or anywhere. People put bridges in the strangest places, I'm going to tell you now. and I'm like really weird. And like lots of other structures like watchtowers and kind of infrastructure, and people build roads and they appear in other people's games and people use them. And it just becomes this amazing collective effort to get to the end of the game, even though you never see another Sam, you never see another player.
And they've added a nice new photo mode for you, haven't they?
Oh my God, I've been going, that's why I've got a working week. It's just horrendous. I mean, it's the best photo mode I've seen because as a photographer, it's one I can understand. It has f-stops, so I can kind of actually use it. No, yeah, it's, sorry, I wax lyrical far too long about it. It's just wonderful, in my opinion. But yeah, I think you're right. Because people are playing it just now, I would go with it.
Okay, that's me convinced. It's already downloaded and ready. Right, so the meat and two veg this time. Sony PS5, and it's because it's been nearly a year from launch. How are they doing? What are the big topics for them, considering where we are? So I think on the face of it, it's been almost like a textbook year for what they would want to do. They're selling out as soon as they can produce the machines. They've got a good mixture of PS5 exclusives, cross-gen games. They're doing everything that they need to do, and they're continuing to produce decent games to convince people to buy the machines. I mean, just looking back over the year, it's for a first year, we've had Demon's Souls, Astrobot, Ratchet and Clank, Returnal, Destruction All Stars.
Yeah.
And then on top of that, there's a load of cross-gen stuff or proper enhanced versions like Sackboy, Spider-Man's, MLB The Show, and now more recent paid next-gen updates like Ghost of Tsushima and Death Stranding, and then alongside the sort of enhanced backward compatibility, which I'm still quite surprised Sony have done such a good job of, considering they tended to ignore or not really do it for such a long time. But backward compatibility, other third-party games and things like God of War and the earlier patch for Ghost of Tsushima, it's been pretty good on the standard things that you would measure a console launch year by.
There is an undertone to all of that, which I guess we'll get into. But yeah, they've
I was going to keep a tally of how many times you mentioned Jim.
Yeah,
but it might just be one massive rant. Hold yourself back all the way through and then just a massive tirade of swearing and Jim.
We have all been Jimmed this year, unfortunately. Yeah, I definitely agree. It's probably the in terms of all the launches that, you know, I turned 50 this year, fucking hell. All the launches that I've seen in my life, it's definitely the best one. There's no doubt in my mind that, you know, I know Demon's Souls was a remake, but it was probably the best remake that's ever been created, certainly in my eyes. And to open with that was a real statement of intent. For me, I mean, I really enjoyed Astrobot. I didn't rate it as highly as a lot of other people, but that's just because I don't really, I mean, it falls in the same category as Ratchet and Clank, really, and they're really not my thing, but a lot of people, yourself included, I believe, rate those highly. For me, the two big ones are Demon's Souls and Returnal was an absolute joy to play, and I think completely raised House Mark's profile up into the totally big leagues.
Yes, and it's quite a risky title.
Yes,
considering other areas and things, it's very hardcore and takes a no-nonsense approach to what it wanted to do.
It was also not what the fan base wanted.
No.
From Housemarque. You know, that's the thing. And I'd argue it's like one of the most Housemarque games Housemarque have ever made. It's just a different perspective. But it was a big risk in many ways on Housemarque's part and on Sony's part, to be fair to them. Although I would argue that they are becoming more and more risk averse.
Yes, I think that's what stood out to me, actually, that in previous years, you'd see a lot of risky ventures by Sony, and that stands out because of what it is in amongst the rest, which is reasonably safe. I mean, Demon's Souls isn't necessarily the most populist type. Well, not it's a popular move. It's not the most sales-grabbing move.
If we look at, all right, so we've got Demon's Souls, Astrobot, Ratchet & Clank, Returnal, Destruction All-Stars, Sackboy, Spider-Man, Miles Morales, MLB The Show, Game of Thrones, Death Stranding, God of War,
Ghost of Tsushima.
I was like, Game of Thrones? that's new. There's only one game in there that's new IP.
Destruction All-Stars. It's not really going to be an IP.
Well, I would argue Destruction All-Stars was intended to be a successor to Destruction Derby and failed.
Yeah, intended to be an IP. I don't think it's ever going to see a sequel.
Yeah,
there's not a lot of new innovative stuff in there.
Yeah, well,
I think there's not a lot of...
There's a lot of innovative stuff there.
Okay, yeah.
I just don't think they're prepared to risk it on a completely new IP. It just seems... We'll get on to the event they had, which maybe knocks that argument on its arse a little bit. But in terms of up until this point, looking at all the things that had been released, they were all sequels or... next gen versions of, or DLC for, or a Game Pass version of existing series or remasters or remakes, which is hardly a risk-taking stance. And when you look back at the other PlayStation launches, when you had, you know, the likes of weird games like Fantavision.
There's not a lot of AA or smaller titles in there.
No.
It's almost like they've accepted they will get a decent amount of indie titles that covers that mostly. What they need to cover off is big blockbusters that will make them the most money. And it misses what's always attracted me to Sony, which has been the variety, the depth.
Yeah, the continuous argument you get is that, you know, for all that Microsoft are known for racers and first-person shooters, what you get with Sony now is that third-person action adventures.
Yep, story-driven third-person action adventures.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that, yeah, to an extent they're filling a gap that isn't particularly well-served elsewhere.
Yes, yeah, absolutely.
But they do seem to be filling it and then piling on top of it and then adding a big mountain on top of it.
Yeah.
And I get that there's a lot of variety in the action adventures that they do produce, but I would like them to see them put that sort of money behind something else.
Yeah, I mean, this is not the Sony that created MAG.
No.
Which was madness on a PS3. You know, that's the kind of risk-taking Sony I miss. And it worked, and it was a glorious accidental success. It's like, oh my God, it worked. But yeah, right now, I'm not seeing anything that kind of gives birth to a genre coming out of them at the moment, like when the original Demon's Souls was released.
Yeah, we've kind of covered availability. There's lots of reasons behind availability.
I think that it's worth dwelling a little bit on this idea. What we've got written down here is good number sold, but still not possible to buy off the shelf. And I think this is something that arguably it's skewing the impression of how good Sony's year has been, because I mean, we actually don't know how many people have actually got PS5s. We know that scalpers have bought X number, X millions, but how many of them have sold through? The only real way you can tell is by the number of games that sell off of the store.
Yeah.
And it doesn't seem to equal the number of PS5s that have been sold off the shelves.
I don't know. I think that it's hard to tell because you only get stats from particular regions or areas. You see stats for recent big games being sold are cross-gen, and you're seeing that 50-plus percent are on PS5, another 20% on PS4, and then less for Xbox Series.
Yeah.
Or Xbox. You're never going to get a dissection there. And I think that number of machines out there is similar to PS4 launch year or better. So it can't just be millions scalpers are hoarding. Otherwise, their price would go down. They must be able to sell them on if they're not selling them on for the same sort of prices now as they were at launch, but they're still an issue.
Yeah, I mean, to be fair to Sony, that certainly in America, I believe they've started to try and address that issue.
Yeah.
There's some kind of lottery system involving the PSN, if I remember rightly.
But yeah, on top of that, you've got the whole COVID situation and semiconductor availability.
Well, what they've said is that they've sold through more than they did with the PS4.
Yeah.
So how bad could it be?
Yeah, but you'd still think they'd be able to have had at least some stages within the first year where it was possible to walk into a shop and buy one occasionally.
Yeah.
But I think it's maybe more an issue with everything being online now, making it much easier for the scalpers as well.
Yeah. Well, yeah, absolutely. I think there's, you know, one very, very unpopular teenage coder who created the software that every scalper uses now. Hopefully that'll ease, but again, it looks like the chip shortage is going to go on for, what, they reckon another year?
Yeah, at least, I think.
Yeah, which is madness. Absolute madness.
Okay, we just had a fairly major OS drop, which has added some features, but how well have Sony delivered on the features and the hype leading up to launch?
Yeah, generally with new interfaces, I always feel there's a bedding in period where while everybody else is throwing the toys out of the pram and not understanding how the UI works, if you wait a while, generally things, you know, settle in and you start to understand that. I didn't experience that with the original interface. I couldn't tell you just now actually if they've fixed how easy it is to leave a party, but right up until the update, I could not for the life of me remember how to leave a party every single bloody time I was in a party.
That was something I kind of worked out. I think it was partly because they changed what parties were.
Yeah.
And you weren't leaving the party, you were leaving the chat. They made it more
WhatsAppy.
Yeah. WhatsAppy. They did a bit of a change, and inexplicably changing the functionality of the PS button between press and hold. That was just not a good idea. But in general, I quite like the UI. I think it's kept the general games across the middle down for more information for accessing system features. And then press your button or hold it. I can't even remember which to access your extra little bits down there for general use. And I think that as a general ethos for your system works really well.
Yes, I think the basic skeleton is fine. I think a lot of the little added limbs are deformed.
Yes. Yeah.
Getting in the general area was okay. trying to figure out which icon meant leave the party or which icon changed the volume of one particular person, or all of these things were unintuitive. I think they've largely addressed that now, though, in the update. They seem to have made things one less, or important things one less click away. They've made the little menu at the bottom customizable. So the things that matter to you, you can move further over to, you know, for me, I would move that further over to the left. Things like, we quite often switch users between myself and Rachel and Lily. So being able to move that all the way over to the left next to the home button and all of those kind of things is really nice. And I think that's a user-friendly approach. And that's something I quite like to see. I'd like to see them do more of that, to be honest.
And where's my folders? You took ages to give me folders last time, and you've taken them away.
I just caught it on my feed just before we started recording, but there was a headline, and it was one of the Sony interface guys saying that when they look at the list of things that they still have to do, it's a really, really big list.
Yes.
So I think they're on the right track, and I think they've introduced some really, really cool things, like the picture-in-picture stuff is brilliant.
Yes.
I love that, especially when we were playing Ghost of Tsushima co-op. That was brilliant in a stealth game. That's an amazing thing to be able to do.
Yes.
So, yeah, there's lots of stuff like that that I like.
Controller, I think, is still very nice. I think it's got to the point where some of the new features just end up feeling quite expected now. And so I can't really tell you exactly what things are doing different, but if you took them away, I'd notice it.
Yeah. Well, Death Stranding's amazing in that respect. The haptic feedback is amazing, like as in the kind of hypersensitive kind of rumble.
Yeah.
And also the triggers, really, really well used. The speaker in the controller, also amazingly well used, and especially in sync with the rumble. It can really sell an illusion very well indeed.
Yes. The fact that it becomes so embedded in the game and what you expect, and it just becomes normal, I think is a good thing.
Yeah.
Rather than it not being all that important, I think it's a very nice controller and with some great little updates.
Yeah. So it's... a lot of people look at it as a gimmick. I have issues with the word gimmick, in that gimmick comes from what I remember, these old gambling machines back in, I don't know, Mafia America days or before then. A gimmick was something that sold an illusion, you know, made people think that something was happening that wasn't really. That's what a gimmick is. And so gimmicks and gaming, all of gaming is a gimmick. And as long as it helps sell the illusion, it's, as far as I'm concerned, it's great. And these things in the controllers are amazing gimmicks to me. They sell an illusion beyond anything that I've really experienced in games before. So, yeah, my only issue, and it is a really big issue with the controllers, is I am now on controller number 5.
5?
Yes.
Fucking hell.
Dirt 5. The haptic trigger broke. There was a point where when you were accelerating, it would give you quite a lot of resistance if you were trying to, like, if you were spinning your wheels, which is kind of the opposite of how things should work, and something snapped inside. Also, generally just had things like buttons stop working or drift. I also have one which it'll work in a game until you want to use the PlayStation menu. And the PlayStation menu doesn't recognize it. So I think something went wrong with the firmware update. So I have now got a 5th controller, which is working. So yeah, the build quality, in my opinion, has not been good for these. And it's not something that, you know, I've seen people talk about having to get new controllers, but it's not, I guess it's not on the same level as the Joy-Con, which is criminal, as far as I'm concerned.
I was concerned about stuff breaking, particularly the sort of resistance and the triggers. Mine has, touch wood, been fine.
I look forward to a post in the next couple of weeks.
I think it's worth briefly, but not staying on it for too long, touching on power of the machine, which is nice. It works. Yeah. It holds its own. It does stuff that keeps up with everything else. So, yeah, it certainly the concentration on the areas that they went for seems to have paid off.
My only gripe, power-wise, is I'm a little disappointed to see where ray tracing is in a game. It tends to be in a quality mode rather than, you know, one of their big selling points was ray tracing before this happened, yeah. Before the launch. But you have to make sacrifices if you want to use ray tracing.
Yeah.
Which I'm a little disappointed with. I quite like the Spider-Man approach where they introduced this afterwards, but you can have a mode which is a mix of both, a balanced mode, where you can have ray tracing, but then there's less people on the streets or something else sacrificed. But generally, it's a hell of a powerful machine. The biggest deal for me is load times.
It's actually got faster, but Ghost of Tsushima, I think in the more recent patches, they fixed something that was really odd, which was when you're switching between outfits and seeing what difference in things like saddles and stuff like that. That was still taking a long time. There was a little swirly ball while it loaded in and then came up. They fixed that, so it's now more instant. The fast travel, when I was playing it earlier, was just blowing my mind every single time. Because when it first had the PS5 update, I tried it and I thought, yeah, that's quite good. But I was kind of used to quick load times. They must have done something else because it's now, it's just there, done.
Yeah. There. Well, the thing about Ghost of Tsushima was that even on PS4, they worked some real voodoo towards the end of the PS4's life. And it actually was ridiculously fast on a PS4 somehow. And then, you know, you take it across the PS5 and it is even faster and it's just ridiculous. And you've got no time to think about what it is you're going to do when the loading screen's finished.
Yeah, where am I going to get my tips from now? Dodge to avoid fire. Hit your enemies to damage them, that sort of thing.
Yabu sucks to anyone who was it that patented the loading screen games? I can't remember that.
Namco, possibly. They used to have one on Ridge Racer.
Yabu sucks to them. Don't need you anymore.
It's also worth mentioning that there's certain features that you'd think they would have already, that the expandable SSD would have been one a couple of months ago. That's now variable refresh rate is something that they haven't implemented yet and seems a bit odd because it should be just like a feature of the hardware, you'd think.
Yeah.
So they haven't done that. And 1440p is the other thing that they don't support that seems to get more. I think that's more based on the fact that Xbox does support it.
Yes.
Hence it gets brought up as a feature that people are desperate for.
Well, I mean, it does limit you if your gaming setup uses monitors.
Yes.
So yeah, that's it's a bigger problem than you might think.
Right. Communication is our next subject, and Sony have taken very much a screw you, we'll let you know when we're ready approach to communication. Yeah. They don't feel the need to communicate or participate in any of the big shows. No E3, no Gamescom. And they've just trundled along and done their state of plays when they were ready to do them with a good 3 or 4 days notice each time.
Yeah.
Some respects I get that considering the situation we're in. And also given how the presentations are done, there is no need, from their perspective, to try and meet these arbitrary deadlines of when other people are making loads of big announcements.
Yeah.
I mean, we miss your big game of Christmas.
It hasn't been so bad recently. I think it's been quite nice having, you know, a bunch of us will get on Discord and watch something at the same time. And we know that there's millions of people watching the same thing at the same time as well. And it's still a kind of collective event. But definitely this year, Summer Games Fest wasn't the same as it was last year. I felt there weren't many events from it at all. And it didn't feel like there was a kind of celebration of gaming this year. Maybe that'll come with, you know, Santa Jeff towards the end of the year. He normally does a thing, doesn't he? The Games Awards.
Yes. In comparison to Microsoft, they've been at every show and done something, but I felt that E3 was big, but other stuff has been paying lip service to the event, and actually announcement-wise have been fairly limited in what they're actually talking about or showing. It's been a lot of expansions to games and DLC changes to games that are already out and information about games we already know about than any big announcements. It's two different approaches.
Yeah, I know this isn't about Xbox. There did seem a little period, middle of last year, where a lot of Uncle Phil's good work threatened to be ruined by Uncle Aaron. That seems to have settled down. Whereas with Sony, Uncle Jim is ruining his own work. I mean, constantly it ends up having to U-turn on something he's said. The amount of times they've said, I can't remember what the phrase is that they use all the time, but it's something along the lines of, we got this badly wrong. It's the same phrase they use every single time.
What will we like?
If you look back at Uncle Jim and his why do you want to play that attitude, you know, we have no interest in VR, and then suddenly PSVR 2 is announced and a lot of people from the PSVR kind of structure of Sony have been parachuted in around him in the corporate structure, which I found very interesting. But yeah, ever since that moment, he's just had loads of YouTube. I've never seen a company like it in terms of U-turns.
I don't think Jim is much of a gamer, and I think that's the biggest issue. He's very much a businessman, and we'll look at it from that perspective, his bottom line, shareholder value, profits, and he will play that game, but he's not somebody who sits at home playing games and really understands the customers.
But the thing is, that's really important for the business.
I think that, yes, if we go back to a Microsoft comparison, Phil does do the business talk, but he does also understand games.
And he was a developer, wasn't he?
Not necessarily much of note, but
no, but still.
Yeah, he's come from there and gone up and worked out how to play the game, but he's been a huge bonus to Xbox becoming what it is today. Whereas Jim has caught on the coattails of other people.
Yeah, the problem is Jim is the reason that Sony is going to have to be really bloody humble over the next, I don't know, the rest of this generation, if they're not careful.
Which is a good thing, probably.
Yeah, absolutely, you know. But right now, I feel like this is the Sony that told everyone that they would gladly get two jobs in order to buy a PS3.
Yeah.
I just feel like they're verging on that right now. I absolutely refuse to believe that their original plan for the Death Stranding PS5 upgrade was to sell it for a fiver.
No. Although, yeah, that's Europe. It's strangely cheaper in Europe for some obscure reason. Everything else is always more expensive, but Death Stranding upgrade, that's your fiver. That's to keep you happy.
I mean, how much was the Ghost of Tsushima?
That was
a really convoluted. That was a Take-Two level convoluted system,
yes,
wasn't it?
Yeah, because they bundled it with... Well, actually, no, they bundled it with and also had an upgrade.
See, it's so convoluted, I don't understand that sentence.
No, they bundled... they did a bundle of upgrade plus expansion. That was the word I'm looking for. And also, you could just get the upgrade, but you couldn't buy one until it was released as well.
Slow clap.
Yeah, see your problem there is you bought it on a day with an F in it. That means you can't upgrade to this version, but if you buy that version, which includes this bit, then you can upgrade that bit and then also get this and this and then buy that separately.
Oh, yeah. God.
There is a lot to be said for just making it simple.
Yeah.
And I think that part of this, we're kind of veering around a bit, but part of this was the original idea that they wanted to make PS5 games more expensive than PS4 games were. So they wanted to up the recommended retail price to 70 quid from 60 quid. And that was the core of it. And then you end up in the situation of, well, if we allow people to upgrade for free, they're just going to buy the PS4 version.
Yeah.
So we're not making our extra 10 quid anymore. So we've got then try and add some value to the PS5 version that we didn't plan on doing maybe before. And you just end up in this odd situation where you have to, and then other places you don't, and then you U-turn, and it's a mess.
Yeah.
And it's all because they wanted their extra pint of blood.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. You know, as if forking out for the console wasn't, you know, expensive enough. I get that these things cost more to make, the higher the production values and all that kind of stuff. But my argument with that is surely a lot of that is covered by the insanely larger market they have now.
Yes.
And the insanely smaller physical production costs they have now, and transport and all of those things.
Yeah.
The logistics of the Sony store on the PS5 has got to be a bit simpler than, you know, forking out for however many lorries to cover a new launch on the
PS3. Particularly with the cost of lorry drivers at the moment. Yeah. I think they were in a tricky position value-wise when there's so many other options that people have explored in terms of free-to-play, games as a service that they traditionally haven't done particularly well, and subscription services that are being very aggressive. And so you're in a position where if you wanted to spend a lot of money on games and not follow that sort of route, then it's more difficult for you to show value. But at the same time, don't add an extra 10 quid to the game.
Yeah.
that just puts you in a worse position from an end user or a customer perspective. You've got to find another way to do it. If you're not making the money back, stop spending so much money.
Yeah, that's exactly it. I mean, we all like our good games and everything, but it has to be sustainable. You know, the amount of people who don't finish a game is outrageous, and part of that is because the next one comes along in 2 days. We are talking about a really flooded market right now.
We should probably talk about the Sony show, because it happened a week or so ago, and I thought it was a reasonable show. There was a smattering of new announcements, there was stuff to look forward to soon, stuff to look forward to in the more distant area. There was a lot of third-person action games. There was a couple of smaller titles that weren't Sony titles that were interesting. Chia, I thought, was one of the standout ones for the show for me. And that it was just the chilled vibe and the fact that you could possess animals and just fly around as a bird for a bit and then swap to something else. And it just seemed interesting. I thought it was interesting that everything wasn't couched and phrased within the various console exclusive, it's going to be an exclusive in some way, exclusive content, exclusive exclusiveness. And I don't know whether that's because Sony aren't paying for lots of exclusives, and the only ones that you can count on there are the PlayStation Studios ones, or whether it's a change in tack somewhat, just that there are more comfortable in saying these are the games you can play on PlayStation. They might be going to other places.
Well, certainly the ones that they make will also be going to PC.
Yes, we'll come on to that.
So maybe that's why.
But you still get the console exclusive. And even last year, the sort of
But if they say console exclusive, then what they're saying is this is coming to PC. Whereas at the moment, we all know it is, but they're not saying it. It's a marketing moment for them when they finally announce it.
Things like Knights of the Old Republic is a console launch exclusive. So they've got some kind of deal going there.
Which, by the way, have you seen any of the footage of the original Knights of the Old Republic that has been going around when they talk about this? Oh my God, it looked ass.
It's quite an old one, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, I just remember it being amazing and I loved it. I was totally engrossed in it. And then I saw some footage of it and my eyes bled. And it's just like both myself and Rachel, we were sat watching. I was like, no, we didn't play that, did we? I just remember it looking amazing. Yeah.
Forspoken, I think, is another one that's a console launch exclusive. I think it was one that had confused messaging around the PS5 launch stuff.
Yeah.
All those stuff prior to launch. But then they had a couple that were things like Tiny Tina's Wonderland, Project Eve, which I think both probably come into other places at the same time, but they've got marketing rights to them, maybe.
Yeah. Yeah, I am really, really looking forward to Tiny Tina's Wonderland, although I am slightly disappointed that there's still going to be a ton of guns in it. That was like, I felt like that was a cop-out. It looks like there's still, like, you can still have axes and swords and all of that kind of stuff, but it did feel like a bit of a cop-out.
There was, it was interesting, at the very least, that they weren't shouting and screaming exclusive all over the place. And the big PS Studio ones, Gran Turismo 7 with a launch date of March next year, and Gears of War, God of War, Ragnarok, that would be an exclusive. Also with a release date, was that given a release date? Something else they've got, the Horizon Zero Dawn sequels coming early next year. They were actually really packing out early next year. A couple of interesting ones were Insomniac, who just seemed like some sort of massive game machine. They've already released Spider-Man Miles Morales, Ratchet & Clank, all within launch window. They've got Spider-Man 2, which I think hints at co-op for me, that they've got both of them there, and also a very early announce of Wolverine coming from Insomniac as well, which is very interesting in terms of where they go with more superhero franchises.
Yeah, definitely.
Going back to Jim started off the show. I think as I was watching it, I normally take little notes and things, and my first note I took was Jim was as interesting and as enigmatic as a damp squid of some sort. He just looked totally out of place. It's something that clearly isn't live. They've recorded it and gone, yeah, that's as good as we're going to get.
Yeah.
And when you compare to Herman Holst, who appears later on and talks a little bit about some of the other bits, he's a lot more enthusiastic. He's obviously come through game development himself and a lot more interesting to listen to.
Well, I just think it seems like he is clearly the next. I mean, the amount of time that he got when it was talking to developers and talking about games and placing PlayStation of all things as something that gamers might like to be part of. It was Herman Holst who was doing all of that. And I know it's wishful thinking. I just think that he's on his way out. It may not be immediately, but at some point, I think Herman Holst will take over.
I think he may get sidelined or shifted sideways and more power given to the people, or more decision-making given to the people who know about games, because they must realise they're not projecting the best of images.
No, especially not with a resurgent Xbox that has a service that might well put them under the cosh a little bit in terms of justifying £70 a pop.
Yes. We've covered some of the cost value, obviously, with first-party games being more. The other point in there is that they're not reducing the price of their games. quickly at all. Mm. It's almost a year, and I haven't seen Demon Souls or Sackboy go below about 40 quid, which is very much a change in tack.
They're taking a page out of Nintendo's playbook there.
Yeah, absolutely.
Which they've done. I mean, I've said this before. I think that, unfortunately, both Furukawa-san and Jim are cut from similar cloth in that they are very, very much profit first people, customer second.
The way that Sony are communicating is also very Nintendo Direct-y as well. They're not announced well in advance, and they just appear when they're going to appear, and very online focused.
Absolutely.
Probably a brief mention of the current services. PlayStation Plus continues to have decent games each month, particularly compared to games with gold. If you want to try and make that comparison, I can't remember the last games with gold game I bothered to actually tick the box on.
No, very long time ago now.
But PS Now, it still seems to be not making that big step, and it's given Game Pass a huge, huge lead without really reacting properly. They've kind of made some changes, they've added things, they've added features, they've made put in more current games, but it's...
Yeah. Well, I think this is where they're hamstrung by this laudable desire to maintain the value of the games they produce. They've even said in interviews that having a Game Pass-like system would devalue the work that their developers do. I mean, in a way, I welcome that. Since we did the Game Pass thing, there's been some further evidence that it's not all sunshine and roses for developers who actually, you know, go into Game Pass. It does have negative impacts, and, you know, some of that is about around people waiting for things to go on Game Pass.
Yeah.
And I guess that's what you want as a gamer, certainly as a gamer who's always bought, you know, as many of the platforms as I could get my hands on. What I'm looking for is them to be different and have a different approach. So what we've got now is Sony very definitely taking a diametrically opposed stance to the one that Microsoft is doing. And it remains to be seen which one will win out and which one will actually be better for developers at the end. I suspect that, you know, 10 years down the line, we'll be talking about Game Pass in the same way that we speak about Spotify and how little it pays its artists.
There have been some notable acquisitions over the last year. Housemark were one of the first ones, and that was off the back of the success and how well received Returnal was, which is a nice one. It's a wonder that they haven't bought them previously.
Yeah, I think that's a kind of about damn time one, you know, that they should have. I mean, I think they have had Sony support for a long time, but they always felt like a Sony death.
Yeah. They also bought Nixes, who are not really known for particular games, but for doing PC ports of things, which is an interesting buy, you've got to say, just purely because of what that then means, and more recent announcements of various other titles coming to PC. And the final one that they announced recently, that they bought Sony Liverpool again, which is just...
I mean, they are now known as Fire Sprite, but it's basically the old Wipeout dev in its entirety. He's just... And, I can't help but feel like that's another Jim U-turn. There was a period back when the Sean Layden rumors were around that they were having a battle, him and Jim. And there was the, you know, U-turning on a cross-platform play. And I always bring this up because I feel really bitter about it. It's Gravity Rush 2, switching the servers off after a year. I remember on Twitter, I can't remember his name now, the guy that was at the head of Sony Liverpool talking about how they were all kind of taken aback and about how sudden it was and all that kind of stuff. So to see them, I mean, it's great to see them come back. I can only hope that Wipeout is coming back as a result and not the Wipeout that they just announced. Thank you, Jim.
Yeah.
Bloody mobile card game. Why? Yeah,
I'd seen that. I'd seen rumours that Wipeout was going to get some sort of new outing and was tentatively hoping, and then it was announced, and then I went into the thread, and then, oh my God. It's a what? On a what?
Yeah. Again, this is the Nintendo playbook. I think there is some talk that there is a wipeout, a proper wipeout in development for PSVR 2 or whatever it ends up being called.
Yeah.
And FireSprite, ex-Sony Liverpool, are now very experienced VR developers. So it kind of makes sense that they get a VR experienced wipeout developer back. I'm hopeful that will happen.
Now, where are they going to go next? Are we going to get another year like this? If Jim stays, I don't see them changing that much.
No.
I mean, he'll do the odd U-turn, but the core is set and cleared out studios that had done smaller stuff, invested in bigger studios that do big stuff.
Well, yeah, we haven't mentioned the cardinal sin that they committed this year, which is probably the most Jim of all Jim moves. For me, that's like, that's one of the worst things they could have done as a corporation. Studio Japan was the soul of the kind of quirky Sony that attracted me to Sony.
I think that they had slowly been reduced to smaller teams that worked with other Japanese studios a lot more, rather than having a lot of in-house development. But it's still just the impact of taking away that name, because they're still going to do collaborations with Japanese studios.
Yeah.
But to take away the Sony Japan brand just seems like, I don't know.
That felt like an ego move. It's like, I'm powerful, I can do this. Why do we need this?
Yeah, you can see how that could be justified quite easily with what have they produced recently? How much profit have they made?
Yeah, but then who made the decisions that put them in that position in the first place?
Yeah.
You see this with a lot of corporations, it's not just in games, where a new CEO comes in and he wants to make his mark. And there's very definitely something about Jim Ryan that he wants to move the PlayStation away from being a Japanese brand.
Yeah, definitely. I think where PS4 has ended up and where it's made its money has given him the ammunition to make those sort of moves.
Yeah, but I think he runs the risk of it being a very kind of hollow version of his former self by doing so. I think that's the worst thing they've done this year. I think it kind of sullies a reasonable year if you don't look at all the U-turns.
Yeah. The increased number of PC ports, I think, is quite interesting from the initial perspective that they're looking to make more money from existing games. And I think that makes sense. Oh my God, PC players are going to get to play it. Why should I need a PlayStation 5, et cetera, et cetera?
Yeah.
It just makes sense. But where it makes the most sense is if they do have to, or they end up going a Game Pass route, then they need a much bigger user base for that to make sense. And the PC arena is where that bigger user base is. They can move into with the least effort, but the least resistance from the faithful, and head towards that area, whether they are actually heading that direction or whether they're just using it as a test ground to try and make extra money. And if they have to, then that gives them a way to become more Game Pass-like, because that's where Microsoft are as well. They stopped talking about Xbox sales numbers a long, long time ago, and it's an Xbox platform that is available on their consoles and on PCs, and that's what gives them an advantage, or the way of making Game Pass work. And if Sony are going to make something that rivals Game Pass in terms of perceived value work, then they need to put more on PC. That's where I think it's potentially going.
Well, I think there's one aspect of this that makes me hopeful that we might actually see more original games come out of this, is that the fact that they did buy Nixes, who are a PC port specialist, will free the original developers to continue making new games. And rather than having to make their money from risk-averse sequels, if they're making much more money from the PC market, then they might then feel like they can take more risks again and produce some new IP. So I'm hopeful that bringing in the PC market might foster that.
Definitely. Do we see any more acquisitions?
I mean, who's ripe for it now? I think
there's certainly a lot of consolidation going on.
Mm.
And I think if you don't expand, then potentially you're just leaving them open to being bought by other people.
Yeah. I mean, there's been some talk of ridiculously big purchases recently. Who was Sega going to be bought by?
That was a Microsoft one.
Right.
It seems every Wednesday is Microsoft are going to buy Sega. Even going as far as, they've released a controller that looks very much like Sonic Blue. They're buying Sega. I could see Sony going for Blue Point.
Oh, God, yeah, that seems like if they don't, then that's really dangerous for them.
Yeah. Kind of hoping that Bluepoint get to, whilst I quite like the remasters that they do and the care and the attention they put into them, I'd like to see them be rewarded with the opportunity to make their own game.
I wonder how they see themselves, because it feels like they see themselves more as caretakers, not in a derogatory way, but that they're looking after and refreshing the history of gaming in a way that nobody else does.
Curators more.
Yes.
Museum.
Yeah. Kind of restoring artworks, that kind of thing. Yeah. It feels to me that that's the niche they fill, and whether they'd actually want to go ahead and do something different. I mean, I'm sure the developers who work in Bluepoint, I'm sure some of them would love to do that, but whether that's part of Bluepoint's philosophy is
quite
different.
A big risk for them to do, isn't it, as well?
Yeah.
Perhaps something smaller that they do at the same time as whatever else they're currently working on.
Bloodborne. I don't actually think Bloodborne needs it. What's the other one that's rumoured? Metal Gear Solid. I can't really think of anyone else who's obviously Sony. I mean, Firesprite, where it's nice to see them get bought, but it was an obvious move, I felt. They made a mistake getting rid of them more than anything else. I can't really think of anyone else who would fit that bill. I mean, THQ Nordic?
Yeah.
They bought almost every developer under the sun who Sony might have thought about.
They bought a lot of smaller developers, but they seem to thrive particularly well on not so much big blockbuster hits, but consistency.
Yeah, well, I mean, sure, frequency as well. They just did a big unveiling and they showed off 20-something games. Or it looks like they've now announced something like 20-something games, but apparently they've still got another 28 to show.
Wow, yep. I get a feeling that one of the big sales is going to be one of the bigger Japanese developers, Capcom, Konami, although I think, is it Konami making loads of money from pachinko games?
Pachinko machines and all sorts of, they're barely a games company anymore. Although they are starting to make some moves back in that arena, but that almost completely died a death at Konami. The Tencent and THQ seem to be stealing their lunch a little bit in that regard.
It's going to get to a point where there's only big fish to buy.
Yep, like Warner Brothers or something like that.
Do you see any major changes over the year if Jim doesn't go? Major fuck-ups, yes. Any major changes for the good?
What would be interesting to ask is, if Jim goes, what will change first? The interesting one. Would they stop fucking around with upgrade fees?
I think that one might be a nice one to blame on Jim.
Yeah. Suddenly everything becomes easier to make cross-platform.
Yeah.
Suddenly PSVR 2 gets much more heavily hyped.
Yeah. And maybe some more emphasis on smaller titles that Sony are making themselves.
Yeah.
Not just buying in.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah, I don't see any change if Jim is still at the helm. Credit where credit's due. He knows where he wants to go and he's steering them that way. Yeah. Problem is, it's not a great route.
And I think that it's going to take a lot to oust him, unfortunately. I think that the route he's taking will, at least in the short term, give decent profits, which is what the people who would oust him are going to see. So it would take some sort of major cock up on his part, or for it to start becoming obvious that they're not going down the right route.
Yes.
Earlier than it is going to become. So that's a slightly sour note to finish on, really, isn't it?
Thank you, Jim.
You know when you've been gymmed. Right, but what are we looking forward to?
Very briefly, before what we're going to look forward to, I did miss out a game that I've been playing.
Ah.
Deathloop, which I've been looking forward to for a very long time, and is the only reason that I'm not playing it is because Death Stranding is a masterpiece. Yeah, that is phenomenal in terms of just the sheer amount of clockwork systems that are meshed together to create just an entirely believable world that you can try and do anything in and see what happens. It is a murder sandbox of the highest order. It's brilliant. And I love the thing that I was really excited about when I first saw the trailer a long time ago now was this idea of the 1v1 invasions. And as someone who gets really pissed off with Souls invasions, that's a real surprise to me. But I really like the invasion system in this. I know that Alex on the forum really didn't. I feel bad, but it just made me laugh an awful lot. Yeah, I really enjoy it. It's actually quite well balanced. Just simple things like, as the invader, you only have one life, but through the loop, your main character, Colt, the one you normally play, has three. So, you know, you might kill Colt once, but he'll be ready for you a second time. Do you know what I mean? So yeah. There's lots of stuff like that. It reminded me of a little bit of a one versus one spies versus mercs. And I enjoy it immensely. Really, really like doing it, which is not me at all. You know, in terms of, you know what I'm like with invasions in the Souls games. I hate them.
Yes.
With a passion. But Deathloop is another one to put on the list. It's really phenomenal.
Rather topically, I'm not playing it because it's totally coming to Game Pass in a year's time, isn't it?
Jesus.
But yeah, I mean it's guaranteed to, because of what's happened to Bethesda. The fact that Microsoft are just fulfilling the obligations with it at the moment. Right. So what are we looking forward to? One that's popped up recently on my look forward to list is Hell Let Loose. Which is strongly rumoured to be a PS Plus title for next month.
Oh, that'd be interesting. The only thing that pisses me off that is the requirement for voice comms.
Ooh.
Because
I did not know that.
Well, if it's the same one that I'm thinking about, you have this kind of chain of command system where the guy at the top is practically playing an RTS. And so you have to have voice comms all the way down. I would love to play it. I'd love them to implement some kind of clever Apex Legends-esque system where you don't actually have to hear every fuckwit talk. Because that's what's putting me off at the moment. But yeah, I really like the look of that. That looks like Mag.
Yeah.
You know?
It's quite hardcore, though, as well.
Yeah.
I've just run a kilometre, a proper kilometre, and been shot from a bush.
Yeah.
Here we go again. But yeah, it's... I'll give it a go, definitely. I've also got Death Stranding Director's Cut, because I only ever started it once on my old PS4, and it nearly took off. There was jet engine noises. I could barely hear it, even with headphones on.
The score is lovely. So playing it with a silent machine is really nice. Yeah, things I'm looking forward to. Actually, this is a phenomenal few weeks, just even disregarding the last week and a half, which has been really fucking stupid in terms of how much it's cost my wallet. So we've got on October the 5th, I mean, there's lots more than this, but October the 5th, we've got Jet with two T's, The Far Shore. I've been really, really looking forward to this one since I first saw the trailer, which was in one of the big PS5 pre-launch extravaganzas, and that's finally going to be here in a few days. Far Cry 6 is coming out. I'm definitely going to get it. I'm probably not going to get it on launch, but I'm actually much more intrigued by the, as always with Far Cry games, I'm intrigued by the DLC. Blood Dragon, to my mind, is one of the best DLCs ever released for any game ever, and it looks like they're going to be having fun with the DLC again with Far Cry 6, so I might pick it up when the DLC starts to drop. What else is coming? Back for Blood. I've been waiting for a sequel to Left 4 Dead for a very, very long time.
Ooh, when's that coming?
October 12th.
October 12th, blimey.
Is that, okay. Is that a Game Pass game?
It is a Game Pass game, yes.
So, yeah, really looking
also
forward to
that. Also coming to PS5, but yeah, it's a day one Game Pass game.
Yeah, so that's a definite for me. What else? Marvel's Guardians of the Galaxy, depending on reviews, but I'm quietly hopeful of that towards the end of the month. The big one that I am really looking forward to is Riders Republic, which I got on the beta for a few weeks back and enjoyed immensely, and you were a total grumpy curmudgeon about on the forum.
I think I really wasn't in the best of moods to be playing it, but it did fuck me over with the inverse look.
I didn't really understand your argument there, because it allows you to change the invertedness of every single sport individually as well as on a global basis.
No, it doesn't. Not exactly. It allows you to change them all, but it doesn't make clear what its standard for each of them is. So it just kind of...
I think
so
that's
So I changed
difficult.
Them all and then ended up, when I was on foot, trying to move forward and finding myself running out of the screen towards myself, which is just an option that nobody wanted.
Well, yeah. I mean, to be fair, it's a beta, so feed it back to them. Also... I mean, they're trying to give you as many options as possible for lots of different sports, some of which are flying.
Yes.
So having different invertedness mean something different is going to be confusing as fuck, but they're trying to give you the options anyway.
Yeah.
So if you end up walking towards yourself, switch it off.
Yeah, I know. But then I have to go back in and work out which one of the ones is wrong, when really it should be reading my fucking profile where I said I'm inverted.
I refer you back to my earlier beta answer.
Like it's going to be any different in the main
bloody
game.
And there is one other game that I'm really looking forward to. I can't remember. I'm going to look this up, because I think it's actually fairly early in the month. I've been looking forward to this. Is going to fly under a lot of people's radar, but it looks amazing.
We need to fill some space.
It's actually out. Oh my God, it's out tomorrow. Fantastic. Lemnis Gate.
Ah.
Now, Lemnis Gate is like it's another time loop thing. It's a time loop 1v1. You can play 2v2 shooter, where it's a bit like Overwatch, where you take turns with each operative. They call them operatives. And so, for example, you might, on your first move, make a run towards the goal, whatever the target is. And then your opponent will take their move, and they may go and shoot you before you get to where you got to in your move, because the same loop is looping over each turn. And then in your next turn, what you can do is take them out, and which then allows your first guy to get to the turn yet. And it's a complete mindfuck, but the potential for amazing tactics, it sounds actually genuinely quite chilled, because while you are taking 30 seconds to do your move, you're spending time planning your move. You're watching somebody else with their move. And best of all, there is a hot seat mode. So you can be sitting next to somebody on the sofa, just pass them a controller to let them take their turn, which is brilliant. When was the last time you played a hot seat mode in a game?
I know. Were you aware that it's a Game Pass game?
I did wonder. But I have paid for it on PS5 because it's only 11 quid and I think they deserve the support.
I am slightly looking forward to Super Monkey Ball because they brought back Monkey Target. And if I can find people to play Monkey Target with me, I will be a happy monkey. As long as the Monkey Target's done properly and they haven't just messed with it. But yeah.
Unfortunately, their microtransaction policy is egregious. Selling celebrity monkey balls for a fiver a pop so you can play as one of the characters from Yakuza, I think, was one of them. You could pay a fiver to be, you know, have a Yakuza in a ball instead of a super monkey. Why would you have anything but the super monkeys in Super Monkey Ball?
Madness. Yeah. I used to play Monkey Target Hot Seat. My friend's place many years ago on the GameCube was the definitive version at the time.
Was it really the definitive version? What color was the GameCube?
Purple?
Yes, it was the definitive version.
Oh, yeah.
Right. See, that's the other thing that gets me. It's people who buy Nintendo products in grey.
Heathens. And on that bombshell.
Yeah, I think we've covered more than enough. So, yeah, until next time. I don't know when next time is or what it's going to be about, but hopefully it won't be 2 months this time. Is it 2 months? Was it 3 months?
Ish. It's best not to ask these questions.
Yeah.
So that just makes us look bad. You want to finish on us looking bad. It's 2.5 months, you bastard.
We don't have to try.
No.
We always look bad. Yeah. So it's goodbye from me.
And it's goodbye from me.
This podcast was produced by Dan Densley and edited by Christy McPherson. It was presented by both of those idiots. The music is Game Over by Daniel Zambo, made available royalty-free on upbeat.io. Further specifics in the description. Don't forget to check us out on YouTube and Twitter. We're Clod of War on both sites. Bye!